I know this is not how I die. I will be dead when at the throat of Jakar someday. So it's like, all right.
And then Jakar steps out from behind and he's like, oh no.
It's now. It's now.
All right.
Mr. Garibaldi.
You gotta check this out. Was our last best hope for podcasting. It failed. But in the wake of Babylon 5 haters everywhere, it became something greater. Our last best hope for sharing key episodes from a seminal 90s sci-fi show for victory. The year is 2025. The podcast, you gotta check this out.
Welcome back to You Gotta Check This Out. I'm one of your hosts, Dre Alvarez, and with me, Mike Slater.
Your other host, Mike Slater. Yes, Dre, I'm here this time. I got to cut in so you don't introduce the guest before me this time.
All right, we can get into the pedantry here of, you know, sometimes I introduce Mike by saying his name over and over again, but Mike does not follow Candyman rules, does not follow Beetlejuice rules. We have to say explicitly, Mike Slater of MikeSlater.com. To keep people in the loop, this is You Gotta Check This Out. We go through nerdy things of our past that we think you have to check out, and we do cherry pick them because we selected Babylon 5, which is massive. It's over 100 episodes of television. If you don't want to watch all of us, if you want to just watch key episodes that are handpicked by experts, questionable experts, but experts nonetheless, that's what me and Mike are here for. And we got a first here. We do having guests that we introduce to the show that we make check out, but Mike, you pulled an audible.
We decided to flip the script on ourselves this time. Instead of having a guest who has never seen Babylon 5, I have picked an expert, at least from my perspective, because this is the person who introduced me to Babylon 5 when it was first, I think, in season 3 or 4 back in the day. This is my old roommate and friend from college, Carl Wolf.
Hello. Yeah, my name is Carl Wolf, and Mike and I went to Alma College together in Michigan. And back then, I was obsessed with the show. I guess I still am. But we were part of a little fan club that kind of grew into a kind of a little phenomenon in our circle of friends called the 5 Pounds of Meal Club. Because back then, the show was syndicated and was not on reliably. So sometimes we would have to make a trip down to Lansing, where one of our fraternity brothers who had graduated and was going to graduate school down there, he could record it. So we would drive down to Lansing from Alma, grab the videotape, drive back up, but grab like these 2-pound burritos and a 2-liter of pop. And the goal was to eat all the food and drink all the drink before the episode was ended. And yeah, and over the course of some years, like we got a little, you know, following of friends. And yeah, it was quite glorious. And then, yeah, and so I kind of nicknamed Mike after one of the characters on the show, Zathras, because he's a little philosopher and kind of bouncy and floofy, which Mike definitely was and still is.
I'll definitely take it. Yeah, most of my early memories of Babylon 5 were you, as my roommate, coming around. You've got to check this show out. Look here, read everything about here. They have this all over the internet, this lurker's guide. I've printed it all out for you, and now we're going to go to Lansing, eat burritos, and watch the show.
Man, there were too many things to try and address, but I'll get to my best. The first off, I will say, just speaks to me and the fact that I'm a big old guy. That challenge doesn't sound too hard to me. Sounds delicious, but I'm like, so what's the challenge? That's just called watching Babylon 5. Anyway, and then we do basically, if we're talking, you got to check this out lore, we have, it's like a vampire situation or a multi-level marketing scheme where Carl is kind of the start of this, because you basically did exactly what we were saying. It's like, hey, you got to check this out. And the way Mike and I started this specific podcast was Mike hearing me on various shows just referencing Babylon 5. Something I appreciated in the show notes that, Carl, you added is really referencing, like, Tolkien. Mm-hmm, it's, you know, mm-hmm. It's not hard to recognize. I felt so proud of myself in college for recognizing this, and everybody recognized it if you're a first-year lit student, that Babylon 5 is ostensibly Lord of the Rings in space.
Oh, yeah.
This is a famous 2-part episode, War Without End, we're going to be covering today. And it's JMS, I think it's... I might be getting ahead of myself, but he got a chance to retcon a lot of stuff that he wanted to put in when he lost Michael O'Hare early on, and really got a chance to fit stories together that he really didn't think he'd be able to.
We're going to get you caught up in case you've been following along. So the last episode we covered on this show was Severed Dreams.
Previously on Babylon 5.
In Severed Dreams, they broke away from Earth. In Ceremonies of Light and Dark, my pithy thing is Delenn, is trying to convince all of her friends to go to an improv show. That's how I read it. But what happens on that episode is Babylon 5 is broken away from Earth. We're seeing people like, you know, terrorist acts on the station, what's happened. And Delenn is trying to get them all to go through a rebirth ceremony. And oh my God, the music of Christopher Frank on this episode absolutely nails it, because it's supposed to end with them all in these new glorious uniforms. And I was like, cool.
And I still like the uniforms. I think you're letting our last guest, MVB, getting into your head a little bit much. Was it really that cool the whole time? And yeah, that was cool. I like that ending. I looked at that one as the one where they like really brought more of the Night Watch forward, because before then, it was just seen as a part of the ministry, and a bunch of times when Lieutenant Haircut, this is his relation to them.
Well, what I find interesting about that episode is also, it's kind of like a liminal space. It's like a doorway. It's, okay, we just got through this huge traumatic event. What the hell do we do now? And so like the rebirth ceremony and the bringing out the new uniforms, in a way, the uniforms also kind of look kind of priestly. You know, they even kind of have that little cutaway in the center. So I think that they're giving a little homage of that we're no longer just military folk. We are like Templars, you know, we are like holy warriors in a way, on a much more, you know, on a higher calling. So yeah.
Other fun part about that, we do get the canonical wrap-up of the Talia Ivanova love story that, you know, could never be. And as a result, you know, the network probably didn't want it. As a result, Talia didn't really get a lot of good acting time. And as a result, Andrea left the show. So we don't get that, but at least we get canonically Ivanova saying they loved each other. Sheridan finally tells Delenn he loves her. Yay. Now, next episode, we get the real reason for this episode is we get Veer back. The actor who played Veer had other commitments, so he had to get written off the show briefly. He goes to be an ambassador for
Veer. I think you mean Abrahamo Lincolni.
Oh my God. And yeah, Lincolni. Underlying thing is Veer is back. He's going to lose his ambassadorship because he's using his position incorrectly to actually help refugees. And he also gets engaged, and then the engagement breaks off when he finds out his wife is a major racist. And we do see just how much, like, this is going to be a running theme, Mike, how much people leave their scruples on the door for love or for horniness. Because Veer's, yeah, you're racist, but, you know, maybe you could change. You're pretty hot, so if you want to change,
that's how that episode ends. Running the Underground Railroad for the Narn that she is racist against, too. It's very surprising that, what are you going to do? I love her.
Yeah.
And there's also the Sheridan Delenn love story is starting to blossom, because, like, in the previous episode, he finally tells her that, you know, yeah, I think I care about you more than just as a friend. And so I think they go on their first date in this episode.
Something I always thought was a little campy, but actually I realized after the fact is really clever on JMS's part is Minbari, they're portrayed as priestly and holy, and we don't, you know, we don't lie, we don't do things. But over time, like, especially Lanier, you see him do kind of duplicitous things. And so when Sheridan is having a date with Delenn, she, like, lies to him to season her food because he's a bad cook. And she's, I'll forgive it later. And it's funny because she's like, that's campy. But it is funny that we do get the point that the Minbari, even the religious caste, will certainly bend their scruples, you know, ends justify the means and all that kind of fun stuff.
And even in a Three's Company episode type of way with the three of them together.
Well, and Lear is starting to become that kind of Lancelot character, the unrequited love thing.
Oh, absolutely. Well, speaking, that is an amazing segue to our next episode, a late delivery from Avalon.
Oh, yes, yes.
My God, for backstory, I'm a big Michael York fan. I did a podcast episode on Logan's Run. This one, even as a nostalgic fan, was tough because we get King Arthur is back. And the story is really cool because the real story is this person was the gunner on a ship that started the big war that's the backstory to all of this. And not only that, he then goes on to the biggest battle where everybody dies, but he lives. So this guy has the biggest case of survivor's guilt, like, in the history of ever. It's impossible to top it. And it's an amazing story about, you know, him dealing with that and what's right, what's wrong, ethics, what to do, etc.
Yeah, I like this. This was like a really rare kind of just straight up world building episode in the middle of season three, like a lot of the season one episodes. It doesn't tie into the bigger plot necessarily or move it along, but it just shows like one character, how he fits into that war, what it's done to him. It's a very memorable episode for being something that you can tell people like, oh, you can kind of skip that one if you want the full story. But it's really a good episode just to watch in and of itself is what I got out of it.
Story is great. The acting is great. The world building is great.
But also, even though this episode doesn't like necessarily move the plot forward, it does in subtle ways. One, because Michael York's character's experience is identical to what Marcus went through in his survivor's guilt. And also, JMS is starting to not just pull in the Tolkien references, but now he's tying the Arthurian legend into Babylon 5 itself in all these kind of unique ways and hinting at future episodes like, and who is Morgana Le Fay, you know, which we will eventually
there
find out.
There is also a running thing that we have seen, Mike, which made me laugh. We have another Kosh out of nowhere, which is hilarious because behind the scenes, the Kosh costume could not even fit through the doorways. The number of times that Kosh, this giant, slow-moving mech thing, sneaks up on people is absolutely hilarious. And the end of that episode literally is Marcus, like, literally doing a modern fanboy thing. Who's this person? We'll play this person. We'll play this person. And randomly turns around and he's, and you're telling me Kosh isn't Merlin? And Kosh, I'm Kosh. And then goes off. And you're just like, what the hell was that? All right. Now, I'm going to combine the next two very briefly, but then we'll talk them out because I have the exact same line for him, which is major antagonist of the show gives away all of his scruples because the shadows may have killed his illegitimate lover. So episode 14, we have Ship of Tears, where Bester, Psycor, Big Bad comes to the station and is like, the shadows have arms shipments. We've intercepted them. I want to help you out because the shadows are against telepaths. World building wise, we learn that shadows don't like telepaths. We have one of the coolest scenes where we have a Superman 3 telepath that's merging with the Babylon. It is amazing. I'm like, man, are we going to see more of that? Nope, we're going to see bad CGI. Amazing episode there. But in the end, Bester is just, you know how I was your enemy? Well, the shadows, that's my lover. She's got my illegitimate child. They've turned her into a weapon and you're the only people that can cure her. I'll team up with you. I'll give away everything for that. It was a really cool episode. And I did think the practical effects were awesome.
So I was kind of personally had a lot of feelings about this because I'm a gay guy. And so like the Talia Ivanova love story that got, you know, tragically cut off. So I was invested with that. And so here we come, Bester, who confirms that he's responsible for the murder of Talia. And now he wants us to save his lover, that fucking hypocrite. I was so angry. And then now we got to team up with this bastard, you know, besides all the other horrible things he's done. So it was definitely, you know, an emotional like experience for me the first time I saw it.
You actually have to give super extra credit to Ivanova's character in that because you stop, he's baiting you and she gets it. Like she knows she can't crack. We know for a fact that, you know, she is a latent telepath and all of this. And I mean, again, as we will explain in this episode as well, JMS having to retcon things majorly, I would make the agreement that one, the getting rid of Talia and the how, they never really quite resolved it. And it's understandable because there was other stuff to do. But yeah, that does make sense. At the end of the episode, it's like, thanks for saving my loved one that they were going to experiment on. Didn't you say you did that at the beginning of the episode? He's like, eh, what you going to do? All right.
So yeah, what was the one in the next? Was
Londo. So Londo is finally, you know, Londo is always that character. He's a very Lewis Litt character, as the modern contemporary give, where he'll team up with the shadows, realize it's wrong. This is the last time. So he's told Morton, hey, we need the Centauri being agents of chaos. Why did you get them to stop? And Londo's like, you go to hell. And Morton is initially, is he going to do something? And he's, wait, I can be duplicitous. And what we do also find out is just by happenstance, Adira, who was his fling in season one, he's having her back on the ship. He's going to be happy. He's in love with her. Let's be clear. He knew her for the span of a day. So this is definitely infatuation on his part. Sorry to get into the weeds, but Vera is arranging a bunch of stuff. But of course, Mr. Morton kind of sneaks in. What I do love here briefly is like, Morton is an agent of the shadows. The shadows are the most evil beings in the universe, and they do have like links to the Psycor. And Morton does like a sitcom trick to be duplicitous, which is kind of funny to think about it after the fact. But essentially, Morden kills Lady Adira, claims that one of Londo's political enemies on Centauri did it. And Londo, who has said, I'm a patriot, I'm for the good of Centauri Prime for the last three seasons, that's how he's justified his war crimes, is like, ah, screw it. Lady I had a one-day fling with died. Kill it all.
I really enjoyed this one. Anything with Rafa, I end up being a big Rafa fan anytime he's on the series. But this episode, I really enjoyed Londo getting to really use that duplicitous nature he does to really kind of turn the knife in a different way upon Rafa, because he's still very loyal to Centauri in general the whole time. But you can see him really going against the shadows, kind of for the first time, taking some big action against the shadows, as opposed to, like we talked about earlier, when he was the only one who couldn't see Kash as the angel, how that was kind of a turning point in his head. Now he's really starting, while he's still kind of doing villainous things, he's slowly making his many arc turn around.
Same episode is wild, because not only do we have Londo like going to the dark side, this is the episode where Sheridan tells Kosh, hey, you got to put up or shut up. I got to get everybody to get along. They won't get along. The shadows are out in public, right? He convinces Kosh to actually win a battle for them to get everybody to team up. And as a result, Kosh is killed by Morden. So again, it's funny because Morden on the one end is, I'm tricky. I'm pretending to be somebody else to trick you. And then the other side, he just like breaks into Kosh's room and with two shadow guys just kills Kosh.
Well, and also the Kosh appears to Sheridan as his father, as we see, you know, hintings of, and, you know, more obvious examples that the shadows and the Vorlons appear to our characters as their parents, showing that they're part of the elder races.
This is actually a good off-ramp to ask this, but Carl, you watched this in real time. Were you watching this live? Like, you didn't know what was going to happen next or season ends?
Correct, yes.
What was that like?
It was, well, first of all, this whole episode filled us with dread, because the whole episode is particularly creepy and filled with like the feeling of doom. Like the music is just like, you feel the eldritch horror of the shadows coming. Like they're attacking openly now. They're not like hiding behind the Centauri. And to see Morden so brazenly appearing on the station with the shadows, you know, barely cloaked behind him. And then finally the final confrontation, you know, with Kosh and the shadow. It was really emotional because, you know, you've been like, you've really identified with Kosh, and there was like this breakthrough almost between Kosh and Sheridan. So Kosh isn't just this enigmatic, like super being, like, oh, he has feelings. And okay, now we're making some progress. And then he's fucking killed. And I cried quite a lot. Like the first time I saw it, it was very emotional.
There's a whole death of your parents type thing going on in this episode. That ties right into all this. Knowing about JMS's background with his dad and having to, what he had to do with his life and go on without feeling like he had a father for most of his life. It really was brought in at this point. It gives you to whole, what do we do next? We've had this whole guiding force and we're slowly losing that from here on out.
Oh yeah, big time. But it's also like, you know, we all had fallen in love with Londo and he went down this dark path of like mad dictator, you know, genocidal maniac. But now, then he was trying to pull back and then he just got sucked back in so easily. Mm-hmm. And that was tragic too. And so I, you know, there's a lot of, God damn it, he almost got away. And then he fell right back into it.
Yeah, I mean, there is really something about Peter Jurisic, his acting ability, and that is always the tough part, right? Is like, you have to be the scumbag. Everybody needs to hate you, but you still have to be likable enough to have, potentially, because we're going to touch on in this episode, potentially a redemption arc. At least a version of Londo gets a redemption arc we're going to get to see shortly. And that is a really tough one to play, because if they're too hateable, no one gives a damn by the end. And, you know, it goes without saying, Londo's one of people's most favorite characters, mine included, which is funny because as I've grown up and like look back, I'm like, he's a Nazi. He's just straight Nazi. He's bad.
Yeah, for at least the majority of the first three seasons.
Yeah, even when you think he's bumbling, oh, wait, and what's going on? He's basically a plantation owner that's like squandering his inheritance to start. And then he goes on and you're just like, oh, like when you think about Londo, you're like, he's really bad, but he's the actor who plays him is lovable enough. And we get the cheat that Veer is like the audience avatar. It's like, they're still good. They're still good. And to be fair, Veer's, as we already mentioned, not a great judge of character. So, Mike, let's get into the show.
All right, are you ready for the show?
Yeah, let's get into the show.
That's your cue to skip over my quiz, right?
I thought I would. You're breaking kayfabe, Mike. You blew the spot. All right, anyway, go for the quiz, Mike.
Carl, we have our guest every time answer a quiz. I call this the Talia Winters Memory Quiz. So we have five questions, one for every Babylon, for every guest. Oh. Are you ready?
I guess I have to be.
Category the first. This is nerd numbers. In the opening of the episode, how many years was the box sealed before being opened by Sinclair?
I think it was 900.
Exactly. Over 900 years is what they mentioned. Category next is think, Garibaldi, think. So what was the password on Sinclair's message that he left for Garibaldi in this episode?
It was not peekaboo. It was hello, old friend.
Hello, old friend is correct. So I think you're on to my next category, which is think harder, Garibaldi. What incorrect guesses does Garibaldi make when trying to think of Sheridan's password?
Yeah, he's, you know, snap, crackle, pop, peekaboo. I forget the others.
You got at least one peekaboo. He says, Jeff, Jeffrey, peekaboo, Susan, Michael, socks, fasten, zip.
Oh, yes.
Hello, old friend. All right, next category. It's called No Such Thing as Luck. What words are written on the middle of the panel that Marcus hits at the beginning of the second episode?
What words are on the panel that Marcus hits?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
He mentions something about luck, and then a door drops by. And what's the words in the panel?
I don't know. I have no idea.
It's called the door access panel, because they are searching for a way to get through the door access panel.
Ba-dum-bum-tsh.
And the last category is called scar tissue. Where did Sinclair get his cheek scar?
He got it from, well, there was an explosion. He was in the suit. It was when he was unstuck in time.
I'm going to let you with it because that was a trick question. It was from nothing more than the mind of JMS, who said he just thought it'd be neat to give him that.
Oh, good. Very good.
Yeah, because our episode opens, the story that we were given for Sinclair is that he is put as the first ambassador of Mimbar forever for the Earth, because they had a big war. They were not fans of each other. So he gets placed there. And then while there, he becomes the leader of the Rangers, which is an Earth Mimbari coalition to fight the shadows. So we start the episode. He's got a cloak. We're like, get the reveal. You know, there's no reason for him to have a cloak over his head other than to have that reveal, but we'll give it to you. And another Mimbari is, message for you, sir. This would be post Back to the Future 2, so the exact same kind of story. Someone runs up and is, I was told to on this day give you this thing. We've had it forever. And he opens it up. Yeah, it's over 900 years, and it's a letter to him.
Yeah. He hasn't been around for the last 38 episodes. This is his first appearance, isn't it, since the season finale, season one, isn't it?
It sounds weird to say about a TV show. It's his first in-person appearance, because I think he's given two messages almost like they were recorded over Skype to be able to use without needing the actor on premise.
Well, and also I think Babylon Squared was the first reference to the Great War, you know, the coming Shadow War, I think even before Signs and Portents. And so we knew that there was, like, when first season happened, like, we knew that there was something crazy that was going to happen. And so, like, when War Without End finally occurred and we knew it was about Babylon 4... Before, haha.
I get it.
Yeah. Obviously, you know, the import, you know, and how, you know, massively important this was to the overall story was not lost on us.
Importens.
Yes.
Okay. We'll stay in the
day if we
rest. All right. I'm going to be the one wasting our time in a second. But anyway, and what we also do get is one of the seams that I saw, but is forgivable. We do get some very blatant, like the Mimbari that gave the message is just, I feel I'll never see him again. And then there's a random Borlon. Kosh out of nowhere shows up and it just says, he is the closed circle. And they're really pooching us here. It's like, this is the last we're going to see. If Sheridan's going to be gone, but it's planned.
Like the
everybody
end,
this was
returning to the beginning.
My favorite was the Mimbar guy that was like next to him. Like, what does that mean? I never heard anything of that. That
it just slides away.
Where's my stapler? I just want my stapler.
And Milton as a Mimbar.
Milton Bari.
All right. Now what we get is we've seen
the religious cast. I'm going to go hang out with them.
All right.
I'm going to burn down the place.
And now Dre explains.
Now we get more reuse footage, which is Ivanova saying, they're killing us. It's a distress signal we've seen before. I think this also showed up in Babylon Squared. And Garibaldi's randomly just, hey, the place that Babylon, whatever that quadrant was called, that Babylon 4 was at, he's, hey, it's been transmitting this message. And what's going to happen is he's going to head out there. This is fun behind the scenes stories for listeners, which is, as we mentioned, Michael O'Hare had to leave the show with mental illness. JMS kept complete kayfabe for over 20 years on the issue. Reality is, we'll spoil it for you right now, War Without an End 1 and 2 is probably the greatest example of a writer saying, I meant to do that, with something that should have been catastrophic. Something JMS said is, he said, I had trap doors for everything. And I'm going to do this, if JMS, if you're listening, bullshit. One thing that could have derailed you happened, and you managed to replace that actor with Tron somehow and managed to write this episode. So what I actually love in our notes, Mike, is you're going through the notes and you're starting to notice like abnormalities. I'm like, yeah, actually, that's because this shouldn't work, but it does. And the other behind the scenes with that is Jeffrey Doyle did not like Michael O'Hare, which was another problem because our writer, our showrunner said, these two are best buds. It's a Sam and Frodo. Best buds. They're going to go to the ends of the earth together. And Jerry Doyle's, I will not be in the same fucking room as that guy.
Well, his best scenes were like when they were antagonists to each other. Like in the first season one, when he kept pointing out the faults of Sinclair. And that's when Garibaldi, like when Jerry Doyle really got into the character, it seems. And even in this episode, I think it works with both the actors, especially Jerry Doyle, because he gets to act away from Michael O'Hare.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm just noting that. It's like, Garibaldi's going to basically get benched this episode. That's the why. A lot of this episode that is really fun after the fact is to both appreciate the amazing storytelling of it, and then also even the parts that maybe don't work or seem weird, you're like, oh, here's why. Now, Sinclair comes back to Babylon 5. Garibaldi and him miss each other, and Zach Allen, or Lieutenant Haircut is how you've been calling him, is, welcome back, Sinclair. Now we get another case of a letter happening, which is Delenn. Delenn also gets a letter, and she's just, hey, we got to go to, she goes to Sheridan. She's like, hey, we got to go to the White Star. And it's funny because Sheridan tries to play it as if he's not going to listen. And she's like, do you trust me? It's like, she didn't even need to pull this. He was going to go to the ship with her anyway. But, you know, we got to add a little bit of dramatic tension.
Yeah.
But we
was it implied that her letter is also from Valen, or does that come from Epsilon 3? Okay, cool.
They're all from Valen. Valen wrote a letter to Sinclair. Valen wrote a letter to Delenn. And what we have is we have Sheridan, Delenn, Sinclair, Marcus, and Ivanova all go to the White Star. And here's where we get Delenn kind of revealing that, hey, the Minbari know a lot more than they're saying. Epsilon 3 is the big grid. Epsilon 3 is the planet there above. It is sending tachyon waves, right, Mike, into the big temporal vortex. And what they are exploiting is, hey, we're the people that kidnapped Babylon 5. We have video records of it. This is always an interesting part about these future shows where we have so much lore, right? All of these races have ancient lore, but you get far enough in the future, the Minbari are like, yeah, we have video evidence. And they have video evidence of them and the White Star up by Babylon 4 when it vanished. And Babylon 4 is the station that was used in the last great war 1,000 years ago by the Minbari. Delenn has this magnetic set that she spent all of season one building. And then a magnetic set shows up in the past. And I was like, well, wait, what? How does that magnet, where did it come from? But Mike's actually right. If you're listening carefully, what we find out, we have a case of an actor couldn't be there, but a backup could. Zathras is, Drawl can't be here. Drawl is the person controlling the great machine. Drawl can't be here, but I have to help. And another brilliant thing that I love that JMS had the foresight to do, Zathras is talking. So Zathras is like this little funny guy that showed up before, talks weird. He showed up in Babylon Square.
He's like the Drawl Thrall. He's
the Drawl Thrall. Yes. I love that. That's great.
All right. So yeah. Zathras is this funny little alien that helps the great machine that's shown up a few times. He talks funny. He's weird. And he's like, Drawl can't be here. I'm helping out. Another person that looks just like Zathras is talking to him because, hey, maybe you're going to lose a Zathras, but you want a Zathras in the future as a writer. So, hey, calling that ahead. And so Zathras is going to go from Epsilon 3. He, as I said, this was answered my question. Epsilon 3 has all of the time travel technology that they will be using. So Epsilon 3 is the start of the loop. If you're a nerd like me, that's, wait, how did this, where did this loop start? We actually do have a definitive answer in this episode. Epsilon 3 opened up the portal. Epsilon 3 has the technology that's going to be needed for everybody going through the portal.
Put a cap on it, Dre.
Just to cap off what I was kind of saying, like, Delenn has them all in the White Star. She's like, I've got this really ancient, really protected footage, right? Like, I'm showing you something that no one's allowed to see, and it's Babylon 5. It's the White Star. It's the shadows trying to destroy Babylon 4 years ago. So this is before they're back for real. So it's just agents of the shadow. So fightable. And basically says, hey, we are the people that stole Babylon 4 and took it back in time. And then we also get some very fan servicey stuff where Sheridan and Sinclair are talking. Sinclair's like, I think we'd be great. We'd be like Butch and Sundance. This is the team up the fans are wanting. Look straight at camera, right, fans?
Lucy and Ethel.
Yeah, we're like, right. He says Lucy and Ethel. That was some dated references, but, you know, is what
even
it is.
For then, yeah. But there's such a difference between Sinclair and Sheridan, the acting in this episode. I mean, part of it could be from, you know, Michael O'Hare's problems too he was having at the time, but Sinclair came off as very stiff next to Sheridan. Sheridan saying lines like, you mean the ones who stole Babylon 4 was us? And Sinclair is very like straightforward in everything he said. It was stark to see the differences between the captains, because this is the one time we really got to see them interact in the entire series, from as far as or at least from what I've seen, because I'm only a little bit into season 5.
I remember feeling like this, it was a proper kind of handoff, because we never had them interact. Mm-hmm. And it was always like this lingering kind of sadness. And like here, they're finally able to interact and have this kind of proper formal transition. So I remember being really grateful for that, and to have that kind of memory, that echo of first season here now in third season. It's like a completely different show. And so it was really sweet. I liked it a lot.
To your point, though, Mike, like, it is very obvious. I had remembered incorrectly that Michael O'Hare blinked a ton. And that's not true. In season 1, he doesn't. But in this episode, if you watch, he blinks a lot. And we know he was having hallucinations and stuff. So, I mean, that's the other incredible part is, in hindsight, watching this episode, it is obvious how limited he was, right? He can't act next to Jerry Doyle, probably the biggest foil he had in season 1. Him and Sheridan interact some, but there's a lot of time maneuvering that we'll get to, right, as to why they're not all in the room. And that's JMS working around this actor who really can't be a full-time day player, but somehow has to give a full arc, and he is going to. And yeah, now everything's hitting ahead, because what we get is Lanier's, hey, Drawl sent his thrall. So Zathras shows up on the ship with a bunch of time travel equipment and magnetics to play with in the past. And then Garibaldi, just so we're kept in the loop, is like, yeah, the timestamp on this transmission I'm seeing is 8 days from now. So 8 days from now, according to the current timeline, Babylon 5 is going to be destroyed. And what I was laughing about, to just point how much Garibaldi has put on the bench this episode, he's like, I've watched it 4 times. I've got a recording. And it's like, you just, like, twice would have been good. You've been watching your friends die over and over again. That's messed up, man.
Yeah, I got a kick a little bit that Garibaldi was the one smart enough to find the footage and to put together what was happening for everybody, and then just gets benched in the episode.
Well, because he was away and now he comes back. Everybody's gone. We're going to have a good reason, which we'll get to. I do. Zathras, I mean, this is one of those borderline where this character should either be horrible or work. And given that you used him as a nickname, it better be lovingly, right, Carl? I think we all agree. Zathras works.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh yeah. This is definitely the Zathras episode as well. Like, this is the one where I think he gets the most meat out of the episode to be a main character and actually be a proactive character in a lot of this.
We might be leaping ahead, but like, especially in that final scene or the second to last scene with him, like, he really shows how intelligent he is, and he knows what the hell's going on. Yeah. So it's like, beneath the kind of bumbling exterior is this wise person.
Yeah, so, but Zathras shows up. He's like, I got all the technology. Here are these little, really breakable-looking devices that you're going to need to keep from going through time. They're time stabilizers. Really important Chekhov's time stabilizers you all need to hold on to. They're going to keep you stable in time. Guys, by the way, just in case. He also says, you're the one. He keeps saying, you're the one to people. Again, this is an amazing retcon. We'll get to it. And we do get some follow-up, because he says to Sinclair, you're the one. Zathras in season 1 had said the one, and then starts saying not the one to Sinclair. And we get the origin of that because Sinclair says, hey, you're going to see me, but it's not going to be me. So when you see me, don't tell me that I'm the one because you don't know me even though you know me. And that's, yeah, when he's like, understand it. That's no. He's like, do not understand. Zathras will do, but don't understand. Yeah. But we do get that great thing where Zathras knows the one, but he's going to have to deal with the Back to the Future 2 shenanigans of interacting with the same person, one in the future, one in the past.
Yeah, this episode is almost like a masterclass of retcon upon retcon that JMS had to do. It's just like this huge balancing act he's constantly on.
Can I also throw out to that, because this does smack a lot of Back to the Future, right? They're literally doing, hey, we're going back to the dance back in the past, but we can't mess it up or Marty won't be born.
Especially if you see Londo as Biff in the future. Yeah, look what I've done with this, all these casinos around here.
Londo is Biff.
Everything's
burning
around me, but whatever.
We got the Mimbari from Office
from
Space.
Milton. Yep.
We got Milton Mimbari and Biff Londo. Man, Mike, you're on fire. But yeah, then what we do get is Garibaldi's back on B5 and is, wait, I miss Sinclair? Zach says, hey, you missed him. He does see, as Mike already said in the quiz show, right? He gets a message from them that's encrypted. It's the future, but it's encrypted with the most common phrase that he uses at the beginning. He gets a message, and we tie that up where Sinclair says, hey, Garibaldi, I know you wanted to come with me, but you got to understand I'm not coming back. And if you came with me, you wouldn't be either. So we get like a resolution there a little bit for Garibaldi and Sinclair before he just stays on the bench for the rest of the episode.
And is this where they're on the White Star now going towards Babylon 4?
Yeah, so there are two parts, right? Babylon 4, the Agents of the Shadows, so like mini shadow ships, are going to try and destroy it. And what they are going to try and destroy it with is sabotage, which is, again, hilarious. We talked about Morden doing this. I love the idea of a super powerful race being sneaky. So what this super powerful, at least subsect of the shadows is going to do is they're going to attach a fusion reactor to the ship. It's going to blow up and it's going to look like the reactor on the ship went, you know, nuclear. So the White Stars, we got to stop it. And what ends up happening is they can't stop it in time. They manage to blow it up so that it doesn't blow up the station, but it goes off, causing the station to get unstuck in time and go through the temporal rift. And also, I believe it breaks what Sheridan's little time. Amazingly, this fusion reactor goes off in space, and it, out of everything it could hit, it hits this tiny little thing on Sheridan, and Sheridan becomes unstuck in time.
Nukes. Yeah. They're bad news bears.
And this had to have been amazing because I think next episode is where we're actually going to find out a lot about it. But Sheridan gets up. We see an ancient, decrepit Londo, and he says something like, welcome back from the abyss, Sheridan, just in time to die. And you're like, oh my God, that was so cool. But of course, we cut to a commercial and we're going to have to wait. You have to wait another week to see what happens there, right?
I like Sinclair's line about now I'm like the arrow that springs from the bow. Not just his trajectory, but like we see him saying that, like he's like, now doesn't matter what we do now, we have to keep forward. We don't have time to go off and save Sheridan stuck in time. We're on a trajectory right now. At the same time that Sheridan himself is on the trajectory now that we've seen him in the future with Londo at this point, we don't know what's going on. Like, are you going to reveal everything on the future of the show? Do we now know like the ends of the wars at this point? It really like throws a lot at you for just not being the season finale of an entire season.
Although I think what I would have taken for sure from it is because we're told Babylon 5 is going to be destroyed in 8 days, that we do know that like time is malleable. And we've been told this before. We've had like prophets and seers. And as you mentioned, so Sheridan gets kicked out of time. Delenn's like, we got to save Sheridan. I love him. And Sinclair's, no, we stick to the mission. He'd want to stick to the mission too. And then we do get the cutoff. So Londo basically is just, you won your war with the shadow. So again, exactly what you were saying, Mike, you're like, wait, what? You're just going to spoil everything for us? And then to be continued.
Mm-hmm. At least for those people who were watching it back then. Right now, we're going to go right on into War Without End, part 2.
This is how you'd have to do TV cliffhangers back in the day, where exact same scene we just saw. Like, we just start up where we left off, where Londo's being mean and yelling and I'm going to kill you and blah, 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 blah. And then we wind up back on Babylon 4, where Marcus and Ivanova are hanging out together. It's great. You know, I mean, definitely of the shippers, right? That's one of the other unrequited ones. Although to your point, this is an interesting one. I had not thought about this perspective, Carl, right? So you're mentioning Babylon 5, Talia Ivanova is the most telegraphed thing in the absolute world before we literally wake up with Ivanova in bed with Talia. We're like, yeah. And they're like, oh, but by the way, Talia was a mind spy this entire time and she's dead. And the same character shows up. And by the way, Talia, she's dead. She's so dead. She's never coming back. She's dead. And you're like, cool. Then we immediately jump to Ivanova having, you know, the dashing British long haired guy chasing her. So that's,
I had not
thought about that kind of rug pull in the shipping of the show.
I you know, that her whole relationship with Winters that she had hung over everything that they were trying to put in the show between her and Marcus, because it was kind of unrequited the entire time.
I feel like they were respectful in the slow pace. The way he was coming on to Ivanova was like fairly obvious, and we later learned that she knew exactly what he was saying.
Yeah,
and she just wasn't ready for him. And then, you know, but she could have been, because obviously she was bisexual, but she, you know, still had these hangups. And, you know, once again, she ran out of time. And so, you know, Ivanova's a tragic character that way, you know, keeps on having loves ripped away from her.
Yeah. I mean, I can also see, like, it's fine, right? It's fine if they don't, you know, they don't have to get together. Their chemistry, though, just hanging out because, you know, she's serious, you know, no nonsense. Marcus is great because it's obviously a mask. We saw that in a previous episode where he's very happy-go-lucky and jokey and whatever. And he reveals he's just, yeah, this is an act. And so, but in this act where they're like trying to get into the station with the access panel that's just right there, he like hits it on accident. He jumps out of the way. And Ivanova's like, why did you jump out of the way? Like, oh, yeah, the most obvious time for us to get ambushed would have been now. So I hid knowing they would show up because some guards come up and he bloodies them with his bat lip. Just as a note to people, if you ever see someone knock someone out with a blunt object in a movie, if they stay down, they have brain damage. That's the only way that works.
Closed head injury.
Yeah. Mike put it in the notes as fun tussle with the guards, but no, Marcus killed those guards are dead. But yeah, they're trying to break onto the ship, get the tachyon stuff in it so Babylon 5 can go back in time. And we are starting to see, perfect in this sense, Sheridan in a blue suit or someone in a blue suit just kind of blipping in and out of time, because when Sheridan vanished, he was in a blue suit.
I was going to say that the blue suit is actually one of the props from 2001 Space Odyssey.
Interesting. Oh. All right. That's really cool.
So like JMS is, you know, obviously he grew up in that era, so he has a lot of homages to that era of sci-fi.
All right. Now this next scene is interesting and I have lots of notes. So Sheridan was on Centauri Prime with Londa Mollari saying he's going to kill him. Sheridan gets put in a cell, and who is there but Delenn, an older Delenn, who immediately kisses Sheridan. I did have questions. I was like, that's young Sheridan. You know it's not the... All right, we'll give it to you. But she basically...
Why did you get so hot?
Yeah, she gives a big info dump. Like, she immediately says, oh, yeah, you've got that youthful innocence in your eyes you lost years ago. It's, no, he's young. You know what you're talking about, but whatever. And then Delenn gives an info dump where she's saying, hey, we had to beat the shadows. This had to happen. Don't blame yourself. It's not your fault that Centauri Prime's in ruin. We had to beat the shadows. We have a son named David. And he's just like, I'm not supposed to be here. I think she does say, oh yeah, you referenced this once. And then, yeah, she does basically say, hey, after the war was over, there were still agents of shadows around. This, to me, is one of the few parts where, after multiple watches of this show, I'm still like, eh, and we'll talk about it. Yeah, I'll jump ahead a little, because what we're going to find out, we meet Londo again, and Londo reveals that he has a keeper on him, which is like this parasitic organism that is on him that is controlling him. And he says, I gave it a good show, so it let me rest. He basically says, if he gets really drunk, the keeper falls asleep. Like, he can hold his liquor better than this little thing, because it's infused on him. So to knock out this thing that's controlling him, he has to get drunk. And while he's drunk, he's just, hey, I just want you to free my people. But the one big thing that bugs me is he shows them the keeper. He shows Sheridan and Delenn the keeper and explains it. And spoiler, the keepers are going to show up again in the show a few times. And the fact that Sheridan saw all this and never seems to think about it, especially because it is going to come into a story arc involving his son that doesn't actually get resolved because the show ended after 5 seasons and JMS thought he'd get to do more and he doesn't. That's an entire thing with TNT. That thing never sat well to me. The keeper, that Sheridan sees the keeper in the scene, Londo expo dumps the entire thing to him, and then Sheridan and the allies kind of like never think about it again, even though it does relate to future story arcs.
They didn't spend too much time or dwell on it, but it was like a very visceral image, that thing like showing, because the camera goes right up into the eyeball of this tentacle monster that's on his shoulder, that going back and watching the last episode, it's completely invisible and not there. I think it's reasonable to believe that Sheridan is so just out of sorts from both being stuck in time, seeing future Londo, seeing Delenn, who is, you know, age, you know, 20 some years past what he was. I believe that he could forget about a lot of this with all that's going on.
I think Sheridan thought that he had changed the future. And so that horrorscape that he saw was one possible future. And that he says to, I'm going to skip ahead a little bit, to in his message to Delenn, you know, what if I could avoid that horrible future? Like, maybe that happened because I listened to your advice and I didn't go to Zahadum, so I have to go now to stop that horrible future. So I think in his mind, he has avoided that future, and so he's kind of not thinking about it too much.
Oh, yeah. That happened, as you're mentioning, in this scene, that does happen. Delenn says, do not go to Zahadum. Don't go to Zahadum. Yeah, and we'll talk more about the implications of him.
I do want to say, too, I think it's poetic justice, because you've had this running theme, you know, from day one, you know, of the Narn and Centauri embrace, you know, personifying this idea of, you know, warring cultures and, you know, the choice between forgiveness or not forgiveness. And if you don't have forgiveness, that equals death and genocide. And so what happened to Narn has now happened to Centauri Prime. And that final instance, there's also been talked, you know, other characters like Kosh have said, you know, they are a dying people. We should let them pass. Who, the Narn or the Centauri? Yes. And so that last moment of Jakar and Londo killing each other, you know, is a symbol of that choice, which is kind of relevant in our political climate today. Are we going to put away the sword and make peace, and or are we going to destroy each other? Because, you know, after the war, who's going to make the violins? There still has to be something afterwards.
Yeah, Nero's got a fiddle.
So yeah, to that point, Londo tells Delenn and Sinclair, I'm going to let you go. But you owe me a favor, which is kind of funny, but is what it is. You know, he's that friend who's like, hey, I paid the tip, so now you owe me. That's not how that works, but sure. He goes, I'm going to let you free. You bring your allies and you help free Centauri Prime from the agents of the shadows that have done it. And then they run out. Delenn's, don't go to Zahadum. And then Londo says, hey, old friend, you know, you're as tired of this life as I am. The Keeper's going to wake up soon. When he wakes up, he's going to, you know, catch him. And my hope of freeing my planet is gone. So you know what you have to do. And this, like I said, has been foreshadowed since episode one. Londo and Jakar choke each other to death because Londo basically tells Jakar, kill me. Londo gets woken up by the Keeper. The Keeper fights back. They kill each other. Logistically, I don't know 100% if that would work, but we'll give it to you because it is a really good image.
I think the idea is the Keeper gives him enough strength to come back and also choke back Jakar in that moment.
But then I did like your point, Carl, which is amusing because it is the, hey, we're going to destroy each other. But what this really is, these two characters are relics of the past, right? Of this ancient, you know, this hate. And they basically, the old hate of these two races dies so that they can go forward. And that's what we see at the end, which is Veer walks out and picks up the Emperor's medallion, which is also foreshadowed, which is that one of Veer or Londo was going to be Emperor after the other one died.
I think you're absolutely correct, and you said that very well. Excellent.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I just took what you said and put a cherry on top, so I'll take it.
One parallel I like in this episode between Sheridan and Londo is how they both, because they have both seen their futures, there's several times in the series where they're like, well, I can do whatever I want because I know this isn't how I die. Londo brings that up a few times where he's, I know this is not how I die. I will be dead when at the throat of Jakar someday. So it's like, all right.
And then Jakar steps out from behind and he's like, oh no.
No, this, it's now. It's now.
All right.
Mr. Garibaldi.
Next scene, it's to your point on Zathras knowing what he's doing, but then also you can't fight fate. Zathras is like, hey, we're going to make it look like the station has a problem. So they're going to have to evacuate it. And then we'll be able to take over it. That's all going to be good, right? Nothing bad could happen from that. We do get the space, the suit coming back. I'm forgetting it. I don't see it in your notes here, Mike. But yeah, we're going to have the suit stabilizing. And Zathras is trying to fix the time stabilizer. But stuff's going to get weird. But then what actually happens here is Zathras says, hey, let's make it look like a core leak and they have to get off. And the captain says, not on my watch. He turns up the core, and that causes Babylon 5 to jump forward in time. Maybe 3 years ago, maybe 3 years in the past, maybe like it's all happened before. This time it's Delenn that is thrown around in time because, yeah, we have swaparoos. Like Zathras is fixing one of the stabilizers. Other people are switching the stabilizers when the person flickers back in time. And we get this very brief scene, which is Delenn sees herself in the future and then she hears hello. And yeah, I'll give the full spoilers. We've already said a few times, right? That's going to be Anna Sheridan in the future. What would have been my fun note is they swapped the actresses who played Anna Sheridan because they actually were able to get Bruce Boxleitner's wife at the time. They've since gotten divorced. She was able to do a cheaper rate. And so what would have been funnier is Delenn is like, hey, did you change? You look different in all the old photos.
So this is, I'm looking in the note, someone said, is this the Z minus countdown unofficial start here?
That was my take. I think, you know, when I do rewatches and I'm thinking of, you know, that we're heading towards Zahadum, and this is where I think, you know, we are barreling towards it. So this is the start of it. So officially, Anna's coming back. There's going to be this confrontation. All the episodes from this point on are pointing us towards Zahadum. So even though we're not getting the Z minus on the screen, this is kind of where it starts.
Okay, yeah, and this is like where we start seeing a lot, you know, don't go to Zahadum, like a lot reinforced. This and the other episode with Kosh too, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, then this is where we see the splice scene that we had seen before, which I'm curious, because you said you watched the episode together. We're going to see Sinclair. Sinclair is older, and he's going to explain, hey, if I go forward in time, because I've been on this rift before, I'm not able to go forward in time anymore. If I go forward in time, I age exponentially faster. So he is now much older, which lines up with an older Sinclair we saw before. One of the retcons, I believe, is in the previous version, Delenn like puts her arm on his shoulder like lovingly, but that is removed in this one. But she's, come on, we have to go. And he does say, this is why I didn't want Garibaldi. We had both gone through the rift once before. You can only, apparently the rule in this universe is you're only allowed to go through a time traveling rift once. You can't keep going through it forward.
Well, you can keep going through it, but the next time it's going to be really rough on your age.
And actually, the regular crew on the station were also getting visions of the past and the future. And they had mentioned a couple things like we've been seeing some horrible shit, horrible, scary shit. So Delenn getting kind of visions of the future and other characters, I think, you know, ties into that aspect as well.
And okay, now what we get is Zathras is like, time stabilizer's finished. We're all going to be good. We're fine. Hope there's not a Back to the Future 2 scene coming up. Spoiler, there is, because then he's captured by security. And then this is where we get the interaction with the other one, where he says, not the one. And he explains what we've heard before, which is that Babylon 4 is needed as a base of operations in the past to fight the shadows. I'm not sure how true these are. They're on the YouTubes. I think originally the Babylon 4 was going to be pulled forward in time was the original plan, if I understood.
Yeah, that was at least the implication that there was the Great War was in the future, and that's where Babylon 4 was being pulled towards, which was also, oh, that's why he's older, because it's, you know, 20 years in the future or whatever. So yeah, that reveal, or that, you know, that it's actually going into the past was mind-blowing.
All right, so this is the Babylon Squared episode ends. Everybody gets off. They're like, cool, now we can take this spaceship back in time. We see the blue space suit again. Sinclair touches it and it gets zapped. And then Zathras is able to give the stabilizer. And then, yeah, we do find out that, yeah, Sheridan is like, hey, what's going on? I'm not in the spacesuit. Delenn had taken it, right? Old swaparoo. The station, like, Zathras is stuck under a pillar, as we've already seen. And they're like, you know, this was in the original episode. And he's like, now go, leave me, I'll stay with the station. Every time he sees the blue suit, he says, you're the one. And we've discovered that the one keeps switching. And Mike's, hey, this doesn't make sense. It's almost as if the original plan was it to be Sinclair the entire time.
And
when the episode was rewritten, they switched it around to make it explain why Sinclair can't be there the whole episode. Yeah, I just got to say kudos to Mike for noticing that. But that is a retcon that wasn't quite able to be smooth from the original Babylon Squared and having to graft this episode on top of it.
Yeah, I mean, the way JMS said it was like Delenn saw him phase in. And so she kind of implicitly, it was implied that she tried to save him by giving her stabilizer, and then she put on the suit that so she would be the one unstuck, so he would be safe from being flung about. So, but yeah, I like what you have here. It could have been anyone.
Yeah. And like I said, it's almost as if the writer is, hey, I need, this is when I have the availability of these actors. So how do I explain that? Yeah, they were in this. They're all in this. They're all the one. Everyone's the one. Now what we do get, I do love this. So we're at the end and Sinclair does the Bruce Willis at the end of Armageddon, where he's, you all go ahead. And Marcus is like, you're messing with us. I'm not stupid. Like, someone has to take this back in time. I'll do it. And that's when Sinclair does the reveal. And I'd forgotten in a previous scene, they pretty heavily said it with, hey, we're supposed to be going back around the time of Valen. I wonder if we'll meet him. And we've had a few. That's Valen, I think, was in season one, just like a name, almost just a random thing spewed out. After Sinclair left the show, Michael O'Hare, we started getting a lot of this backstory that Valen was a Minbari, not born of Minbari, that united everybody, that he came out of nowhere, that he seemed to know the future. And now we're getting to the crux of it where Sinclair says, hey, I can't go forward in time anymore. I'm dead if I do that. And I have to go back in time. And I go back in time because I've always gone back in time. And I know that because I got a letter from myself. And Delenn also got one from Valen, who is, we are discovering, Sinclair.
Sinclair!
Well, I think this was still on the table as happening, but it was supposed to be like at the end of the whole series. It just got pushed way the hell up because this is the last time we can get Sinclair on the screen. So we're going to make this work somehow.
Yeah, there was JMS, as has said many times, that originally that was the plan, to finish off Babylon Squared and have that Valen be the final reveal of the series. And I think this is a much better way to do it, because everything that they went to and had to go with Sheridan and the Earth War in the next season is just such a great season of television. But they still managed to get his original story in this way. It's, hey, cake, can I eat that and have some of that too and have it and eat it too? Yeah, I can do that here. And it's all through Valen.
And then, like, yeah. I said, this is the one complaint you had here is then I think Sinclair says to Zathras, wait a minute, though, you called me the one, but then I wasn't in the suit. And you called them the one. Zathras could say, I didn't know it wasn't you in the suit. It could have been anyone, like my good boy Mike says. But he goes, no, I've been around forever and I go in the great machine that can see forward and backward in time. And he goes, you're the one who was to Sinclair. You're the one who, what is it like, is to Delenn, and you're the one who will be to Sheridan. But yeah, so he basically says, you're the one who was, you're the one who is, you're the one who will be. Like, seems like some sweaty exposition to try and explain why this character said, not really necessary, but it also does kind of set things up nicely for
it
us to know.
It does. I thought this worked better in writing than actually seeing Zathras kind of explain it, because it felt really sweaty. You know, you're the one because of this, you're the one who will be, you're the one of this. As I... That's the only time when I really felt like a writer's hand trying to explain a retcon and things.
Now, what we do get is something we've criticized on the show, Carl, because, you know, I'm a nitpicker. JMS is good at a lot of things. I think a lot of times his episodes, he like doesn't stick the landing. And sometimes it's weird where you're like, that was a brilliant scene and we're still going. Why did you end on this scene? Right? You could end it on that scene. This has one of the coolest endings, though, because they're like, oh, Sinclair's taken Babylon 4 back to this. And it already did the Valen reveal, but it's done much better because she's basically, yeah, if a random Earth person had shown up with a ship from the future, they never would have accepted it. So the only way it could have happened is if he was a Minbari. And it's, oh yeah, remember that chrysalis thing that turned a Minbari into a human? Hey, guess what? Boom. And
well,
so we get
it's perfect. Like, as opposed to what I thought was a more sweaty explanation of something that works better on paper, this is actually, you're seeing Valen born in a way that makes sense. It comes out of the story. It comes in a way we've seen happen from Chrysalis from before. And it really makes sense to why he does it. So I really loved this ending to where, like, the Valen reveal, even though I knew it was happening.
This ending reveal where Michael O'Hare, as a Minbari, steps forward and says, I am Valen, and we have, you know, a lot of work to do. And then we see two Vorlons out of their encounter suit, and the Minbari find him. And we're just like, that was such just like an amazing ending episode image. And unlike the previous time of Borland was revealed, we talked about the season two finale, and even Mike and I had to just agree that we're just like kosh like flies. We're just like, we'll give it to you. We're like, it's kind of, you right into corners, like then an angel appears and flies him, and you're like, okay. But this is, we're like, it's an amazing angel. Image. But this one like was earned and just an amazing image, and boom, that's how the episode ends. And just like I said, the parrot thing I keep saying is like, how jealous to have seen this in real time.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. And the, again, like the connection with Tolkien and also just the kind of regular Judeo-Christian, you know, symbolism of, you know, this is a cosmic war between angels and demons, but this also like finally completes the link. You know, what is this mysterious connection between human and Minbari souls? This is it. You know, oh, we're kind of like the same people. And again, a Tolkienian reference is kind of like elves and men being the same children of Ilúvatar. So I love all these kind of these little connections here. That makes it more powerful for me.
Absolutely. Mike, any other thoughts on the end of this episode?
No, but it does include my favorite ever comment you've ever had on the notes, where you said, well, what if instead of Chrysalis, Sheridan had to get on the action with a Doubtfire-like costume kit and comes out at the end, hey-o! Now that would have been an ending.
Normally what we end with is we ask our guests, who has seen like one or two episodes, are you going to watch more? Do you have anything else to check out for our listeners that is not Babylon 5 based, or lean in more Babylon 5? Tell them to watch Legends of the Rangers to see if you hate them.
Oh, God, we are the hand. I am the sheet that covers the hand. The only good thing about that was Jakar. He was spectacular in that. But I do have, I made a couple notes of other cool things. Obviously, Bab 5, all day long. Rewatch as much as you can. But some other items that your folks might like. So The Expanse, first and foremost, is tremendous. It is a worthy successor to Babylon 5 and the Battlestar Galactica reboot. Like, you must watch that show. It is spectacular. Some other really great sci-fi is the animated series Scavenger's Reign. And if you're more into musicals, Hazbin Hotel and Hell of a Boss is created by a small indie company in America, and it achieved great success on YouTube, and they got picked up by Amazon, and they become wildly popular. So it's dark humor, great music. So a kind of related animation is an old, like, late 70s, early 80s French animation series called Once Upon a Time Space. And the end of that series, it becomes a huge cosmic story arc, and there's some spectacular space battles in between some of the campier bits. So I highly recommend checking out that series. Book-wise, The Silmarillion by Tolkien, because that relates very closely to what happens in Babylon 5. A lot of references in there that JMS, you know, gave tribute to. For anime, I recommend Neon Genesis Evangelion, which was produced in the late 90s. The ADV dub, English dub, is the best version. I don't know. That's a little harder to find, but that's a tremendous series.
Start a fight. Dubs versus subs. Do it in. Go in the comment. Tell him he's wrong. Let's start that fight. Sorry. I just like poking the bear. You know me.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
That, for good reasons. Yes, some dubs are not good at all. For video games, I highly recommend Outer Wilds. The end of that game is so profoundly beautiful. There's a whole community that will follow other players that react to playing the game, because you can really only play the game once, because the joy, the real experience is that first time discovery. And so we're all going out there trying to find virgins on YouTube playing the game for the first time so we can feel those feelings again. So highly recommend checking that out, or at least watching a good playthrough.
Trying to the find ending virgins is so good.
Good old virgin hunt. You.
That's a phrase that may make the final cut depending on Mike's feeling. All right. Anyway.
And that, my final recommendation, if you like music, I highly recommend Voces 8. They are a Grammy award-winning choir, and they do ancient music, modern music. They're really good. So there we go. That's my recommendations.
Very cool. A lot of stuff to check out. That was all great. I think the first couple, Expanse and Battlestar Galactica, I recommend every other time, but most of that other stuff is, I am not familiar with most of that, besides like the Tolkien things or Outer Wilds and Neon Genesis Evangelion. But so all those other stuff I'll definitely be checking out, Carl.
Thank you so much for inviting me. This was delightful.
Amazing. Yeah. You lived up to the hype because, yeah, basically, Mike, you know, I mean, to be fair, Mike, Carl's a big Babylon 5 nerd. I was like, I'm a nerd.
Not to put you down, there's other Babylon 5 nerds out there, Dre.
Oh, yeah. Doing the research for the show, I'm just like, oh, I thought I. And I was like, oh, yeah. And man, I'm not a teenager anymore who has 40 hours of time a week.
Yeah, like, well, there is a good chance that this podcast would not exist without Carl, because Carl is 100% the one who pulled me into Babylon 5. And there's so much that you brought back memories. I remembered going to the burrito runs, but for some reason, my brain did not connect that with Babylon 5. Ah. I remembered just talking to you about it. Most of my memories of Babylon 5 were our conversations of you getting so excited about it. Ooh, here's somebody I can like sink my teeth into and pull into this whole damn Babylon
Captive
5
audience.
Universe.
Basically.
Yeah, and I'm always enthralled with people who like will just go on and talk and tell me stories about things, which is, you know, why I kind of let Dre go off on tangents a lot on this and do a lot of the explanation, just because I love hearing people like both of you being able to explain such succinctly these things to me. So the more I can do to have, you know, have this in my life, I really love it. And thank you so much, Carl, for taking the time
to be with us
here.
All right. Next up is season 3's final episode, Zahadoom, episode 22 of season 3. Watch it. It's, if you watch nothing else, it's one of the best episodes ever. Ridiculous. Looking forward to that. You can find Mike on the interwebs as Slatron, Slatron 11. Patreon.com/Jeff Mays and MikeSlater.com got a facelift. It's new. And it's got a bunch of amazing notes.
The one thing we didn't do, Carl, is we got all of your recommendations, but is there any like causes, anything you want to plug out there? Anything
Sure. I guess I do sing still. So I would say my primary choir, Vanguard Voices. I like to say we're semi-professional because we're, you know, almost as good as the pros. We're just not paid. So we're based out of Dearborn, but we kind of perform all over the metro area in Michigan. And I guess also my employer, you know, is a good cause, Meritas. So we, especially in these dark times of the Trumpian nightmare, like we work with refugees that, you know, before we were partners with the government, and now our own government is our enemy. And so, like, we're trying to keep 1,000 people
fed. Get on the nose there, Carl, for Babylon 5 reference. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's basically, yeah, we're kind of living in the Clark administration. Yes. You can only laugh because otherwise you'd be crying.
You know what they say to the two musicians, you know, you want to end on a down, sad note. That's how you end songs. So thanks, everyone. We'll
thanks,
see you
Carl.
Next time.
Thanks, Dre.
Thank you so much. It was a joy.
Cheers, all.
Farewell.